I talked to my mom this morning. It's Mother's Day. So I called my mom this morning, and my dad was a pastor, and so that's kind of in our blood to talk about the preaching and things like that. And so my mom said, hey, listen, got this great joke for Mother's Day that you should tell. And I said, Mom, I don't tell jokes. I'm really bad at telling jokes. I forget the punchline. She goes, that's okay. Let me tell you the joke. And so she is what moms do, right? And so she continues, and she said, you'll really love this. You have to use it. And she told the joke. I won't tell it to you because I don't remember the joke, but it was a joke. And and at the end of her telling the joke, and I said, Mom, that really wasn't that funny. And so I'm not going to use that today. And she's laughing, and I'm laughing. We're having it was a total jovial conversation. It wasn't like, Mom, how dare you? It wasn't like that. And then she said, but it fits in with this. And I said, Mom, I'm still not going to use it. It doesn't fit my message at all. But I will use our conversation in our message, however, because that really does fit the message that I'm not listening to you, Mom, on Mother's Day. And so anyway, that's where Mother's Day started for me with my mom. And so we want to talk about the domino effect, the domino effect. And I want to really work this through over the next 6 weeks. This is our series that we're going to deal with. And here's the domino effect. It's a result of decisions we make each day. In our six-part series, we're going to see the domino effect of the decisions that we make and how a few small habits can transform us into the person we want to be tomorrow. Oftentimes, we look at habits and the domino effect as these large, huge things. And instead, I want to look at it as these tiny little things. It's a small habit that if you change this thing, the outcome down here can be huge. It's a domino effect that you start with one little thing, okay? So here's my first question. I'm hoping you're ready to think. You ready to think? Okay, that was like 2% of you, okay? Now the other four, here we go. Okay, here's the question. What does your preferred future look like? What does your preferred future look like? And what does it mean to have a preferred future? It's what do you want to see in your life in the future? If you say, the future Bill Dilworth should be blank, it would look like this. And maybe it's a healthier marriage, maybe it's a finance thing, maybe it's a better relationship here, or maybe it's going to church more often, a better relationship with God, maybe it's a different house, different car, I don't know what it would be. But we all have a preferred future that we're thinking of down the road, and we're going to keep honing in on that in this six-part series, because this is, if we're not talking about this, we're missing out, right? And here's the reality, some of you are in pain because the certain things that you're doing today, and you know, you're sitting here, you're like, I need to change. My future should not have this in my life because I'm in pain now. But oftentimes the pain is not so high that you're willing to make a change yet, but you know you should. Okay, that's one aspect of people. Now, there's another aspect of people that you are certainly just sitting there complacent, and you say, you know what? I just don't feel change is part of my life. I don't need to change. Why should I change? I'm complacent. I'm happy with where I am today. Well, your friends don't want you to stay the same. Do you realize that? Your friends, all of your friends, all of my friends, see something in you that says, if they would just adjust this little thing, it would affect their relationships, their bank accounts, their time, whatever it might be. Your friends see it. Do you realize that? Don't you see that about other people? Now, don't nudge the person next to you. But you know you're sitting next to them and you're like, well, nudge, nudge. If you made this tiny little adjustment, and it's not massive because you love who they are, it's that one little thing that you're like, if you made this little adjustment. So listen, here's what I'm trying to say. Some of you might be complacent. And I'm saying, please don't be complacent because nudge, nudge, right? There's something little that every one of us can change. And if you're not believing that, if your mom was sitting next to you, she would look at you dead in the eyes and she said, you have something you need to change. And for Mother's Day, you'd say, yes, Mom, right? And if you don't believe all that, then God would look at you and say, listen, nudge, nudge. There's this little thing that I want you to work on right now that can have this cumulative effect, this domino effect in your life, that if you were to change, if you were to modify, if you were to just tweak this one little thing, it could have significant impact on the future you. So my question is, are you willing to indulge yourself in this series and make a small change? I went on Wikipedia because that's where we find all of your answers for life. And so after Google, you go to Wikipedia. And so I went there and I just searched up the domino effect. And domino effect is spelled properly in the series here. It's effect, not affect, okay? And you can research that later, not now, but later. And it says this about domino effect. It's a domino effect or a chain reaction is the cumulative effect produced when one event sets off a chain of similar events. The term is best known as a mechanical effect and is used as an analogy to a falling row of dominoes. You see, there's a domino effect. When I played guitar, there was a domino effect of practicing the guitar ahead of time. If I stop practicing, what happens is I'm not as agile. I'm not able to do the things I was used to do. But the domino effect of practicing every day is I would become more proficient in playing my guitar. The domino effect in spending more money than you make is what? Debt. Yes, it's debt. Or eventually bankruptcy if you keep going that direction because you won't be able to pay your bills on time at some point in time. That's the domino effect of spending more money than you make. There's a domino effect of, ready, teens? There's a domino effect of teens. You ready? Listening, students? The domino effect of studying and doing your homework is what? Mom's saying it to you. Getting better grades, okay? And you understand this. That's a domino effect. It's those kinds of things. Here I ran across this quote, is an excellent quote by Craig Groeschel. He's a pastor of, I think, the largest church in America, but he's an author and just a really gifted person. He says this, successful people do consistently what other people do occasionally. There's a distinction he makes, and he writes a book about it, and I've read some other books around this as well, and I'll be referring to that through the series. That successful people, they are consistent. It's that they have a domino effect that they say, I'm not going to just do this once. I'm going to continue to do this repeatedly. And it produces success down the road by doing the right things consistently. And he says the other people, they do things occasionally, but they expect the same results. Do you understand what that means? Okay, here's what this means to me. The occasional is when I want to lose weight, okay, and I eat a really healthy breakfast. I eat oatmeal in the morning. This is how my day typically starts. I eat oatmeal almost every day. And so that's my start. And then lunchtime comes, and I'm doing really well, and I eat a healthy lunch. And then dinner time comes, and my wife says, I'm making a healthy dinner, and she makes this awesome dinner, and it's just great, and I don't overindulge, and I eat the right calories. I'm doing great. And I do good up until the occasionally comes at 8 o'clock at night when I go to the freezer, and I pull out what? Ice cream. You've done it, haven't you? You understand? So occasionally is, hey, I was doing great all day, and then there's 2,000, you know, because what they have on the ice cream box, here's my little beef, is this half a scoop of ice cream equals this. Who eats a half a scoop of ice cream? Nobody. Like, that's not even wet my appetite for ice. You understand what I'm saying, right? So I'm having 2.5 cups, so the calorie, woo, it's not good anyway. So that's what, so a person that consistently is doing the right thing brings success. So that person, actually at the end of the day, they say after 8 o'clock I can't eat because that's fat that's sitting in my body all night and it's going to stay there. So instead what I'm going to do is I'm going to eat at 7 o'clock, a half a cup, and I'm going to be disciplined about this. And then I'm going to go for a walk to get rid of that so it's not, and then you produce the success over time. So today, here's what I want to talk about. Here's our theme today. Our posture. Our posture creates a domino effect. Now, I'm not talking about slouched or hunched over. That's not essentially what I'm talking about. But you should sit up where you are, yes? I mean, if you're a good student, you want a domino effect of this being a great message, you should sit up in your seat, pay attention, eyes forward, not down at your cell phone, yes? Posture. Okay, that's one thing. But I want to talk about posture in a different sense. Posture in a different sense, we're going to look at this taught by two women in three stories, okay? One theme, posture taught by two women in three different stories. So turn with me in your Bibles to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, if you're grabbing your pew Bible, open it up to page 548, and you'll find it right there, page 548. Luke chapter 10. We're going to start in verse 38. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. What does your preferred future look like? Have you thought about that yet? Okay, so Luke chapter 10, verse 38, it says, and it's talking about Jesus here and his whole picture of where he's at. And it says, now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village. And a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. Now stop right there. You have to understand a little bit of the culture there. It was normal for people to welcome other people into their homes. They didn't have the same kind of idea of hotels all over the place. They had people that were, they were hospitable, and that was the expectation that you would open up your home to guests and visitors in town. And so it's very different atmosphere or environment than we have today. And so he comes into town, and this woman, Martha, welcomes him into her house. It says, and she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. So you have two different women here, Mary and who? Martha. Good. Okay, so Mary and Martha. And so you find their posture is very different in this story. You've got Martha inviting Jesus in, and then you have Mary. Her posture is while Jesus is sitting there doing some teaching or discussion, here you have her sitting at the feet of Jesus. Sitting at the feet of Jesus. And she's listening to his teaching. The posture is very different. Verse 40, but Martha, it says, was distracted with much serving. How many of you like to be busy? I love being busy. Like, I totally relate to this. If there's something to do, I can't stand sitting around. I like to get up and do something. And here we find Martha. She's distracted with much serving. Is that a problem to serve? Here's the reality. Somebody's got to eat, right? Somebody's got to cook the food. Somebody's got to clean up. Somebody's got to do the things that need to be done. And so Martha's just fitting in with that. And so she's doing the things that should get done at some point in time. But then she goes and she does this. She went up to him, to Jesus, and she's telling on her sister. Isn't this great? Like, it's one thing to go to mom and say, Mom, they're touching me. Right? Mom, have you had enough of that? Stop touching me. Mom, they're touching me. She's going up to Jesus. Like, this is going above mom now. And she goes up to Jesus and she says, Lord, do you not care? It's as if Mary's not there, right? Like, she's sitting right there. Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Lord, don't you understand? My sister, she's just sitting here doing nothing. I'm talking like she's not in the room, but I'm telling you, Lord, do you not care? I'm not only irritated with her, but I'm irritated with you now as well. Do you see the posture? Two different people. Their posture is absolutely different, yet they're sisters. So the posture of the one is sitting at the feet of Jesus, and the posture of the other one is irritated with Jesus. It's interesting. And the Lord answered to her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. And here's what Jesus does. He points it out. He goes right to the heart and he says, listen, here's what's going on inside of you. You are anxious and you are troubled. I won't ask you to raise hands and I won't ask you to comment, but I wonder how many people here today are worried. you're anxious and troubled. It was everything in you just to come and sit at church today because you've got so much going on. You're anxious and worried about who's going to do that, who's going to do this, and how things are going to work out, and who needs to call, and who needs to text. And you got all this anxiety and worry that's going on in your life. Jesus points it out with her, and he says, here, listen, here's your posture. Here's where you are. Here's the thing that's going on inside of you. You're anxious and you're worried about many things. But one thing is necessary. Mary, you know the one that you're irritated about? You know the one you just told on? Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. Isn't that great? Not really, because it's very irritating to me, because I would rather be busy and I would like Mary to help. You follow me? But the posture is so important. Is it that no one should be doing the dishes and everyone should just sit at the feet of Jesus all the time? That's not the point. And her anxiety level and her trust and the control that was going on inside of her was, I need to control this person over here, and if I have to, I'm going to get on Jesus' case for not getting on your case. Do you see how this is working itself out? The posture is everything. It's the attitude. It's how she's working through life. It's that I'm in control, and this person is making my life miserable. But Mary does the totally different thing. Mary sits at the feet of Jesus, and she's listening to Jesus. She was humble. She was teachable. But notice this. Here's a little, just a little nugget. For those that are really listening in deep, listen to this. This is so amazing. Mary was failing the expectations of those around her outside of Jesus. Do you know how often we comply to the expectations of everyone else while ignoring Jesus? Maybe you haven't been there, but this is something that's so embedded in me that am I listening to Jesus first, or am I so busy listening to everybody else and fitting their expectation? Here, Mary is not even, she doesn't even care about the expectations of her sister and the expectations of the home. She is more engaged with just sitting there and listening at Jesus' feet. Posture. Now go over with me to John chapter 11, three stories. So here's your second story, John chapter 11. This is on page, if you have a pew Bible, it's page 568. So John chapter 11. Now, here's a fascinating story, because you would think that at the end of that conversation, who did Jesus care for? Did he care for Martha, the one that was just getting irritated with Jesus? Do you think that the relationship would continue? Do you think it'd be strained? My perspective is, if somebody's getting on my case for my sister and she's making herself look like the fool, at the end of that, the relationship would be strained, be challenging. But that's not what's going on. So you fast forward through and you find this some season or some time later, you find Mary and Martha, and their brother is Lazarus. And so there they are in this area, and Lazarus gets sick, and they call out to Jesus, and they say, hey, Jesus, why don't you come and help, because Lazarus is sick, and this is a really bad sickness. He's going to die. So come help us out. Notice in verse 5, it says, now Jesus loved who? Martha. Isn't it fascinating, the person that's put there first? The person that was irritated with Jesus, it says, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So Jesus has a relationship with this family that is much deeper. Jesus cares deeply about them and would do anything for them is the expectation. And so he says, here's the perspective. Jesus loved them. And so the expectation then that they would have on him is, we're calling you for help, and you've helped everybody else. You've gone to all the other towns. You've done all this healing. So therefore, you should come to us, and you should heal Lazarus. Like, help us out here. We're friends. Go down to verse 21, and you find Jesus waiting for a few days. Lazarus dies. Maybe you know the story, maybe you don't, but here's what happens. Lazarus dies, and after he dies, Jesus comes into town. A little bit late, but he shows up for the funeral. And he wasn't that far away. He could have made it in time, but he didn't. So as he's on his way in, here's Martha, the first one that runs out to him. He's not in town yet, but she hears that he's not too far away, and she goes running to him. And you find this in verse 21, the exchange that Jesus has with Martha. Martha speaks first, and Jesus speaks second. And Martha says this, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." What's the posture? The posture is, I'm ticked off at you. I'm irritated with you. One, I was irritated with you before. I'm still a little bit irritated with you because you failed my expectations again. You failed my Don't you get tired of people failing your expectations? Moms, do you get tired of your kids failing your expectations? Maybe Mother's Day is one of those days where you have a ton of expectations and you're like, I'm living that failure out right now. They're failing me already. They didn't wear the things I told them to wear. Did you see their hair? I can't believe they did it like that, you know, or whatever it is. And they were supposed to do this. I didn't get that. And whatever it is. And they didn't even say Happy Mother's Day. Here's Martha. Lord, you failed my expectations. And now everybody's turned over. I think I said, did I say Happy Mother's Day? Anyway, Happy Mother's Day, moms. All right, So here Martha comes up, and her posture is, you have failed my expectations, Lord. My expectation was, when I called, you'd come, you'd heal, we'd be good to go, we'd have a nice meal. You know I can cook good, so I'd cook a nice meal for you, and we'd be all good. And Jesus, you failed my expectations. And Jesus' response, so she says something first, then Jesus responds second. And Jesus says, and this is verse 22, so 21, here's what she literally said. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. So Jesus said, your brother will rise again. Martha says, I know he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. I get that, but I miss him today, and you could have prevented this. Jesus says in verse 25, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She says, yes, of course. Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming up into the world. So she has the right beliefs. She even has the right expectations because Jesus could do that. But she doesn't understand what Jesus is all about here. So then you go on down a little further. It says, now when Mary, in verse 32, came to see where Jesus was, she saw him. Notice her posture. This is verse 32. She fell at Jesus' feet. I don't know about you, but that in American culture, that's weird. There's only one time that I fell at somebody's feet. Only one time in my life. That was, 25 years ago and 1 month, April 15th, 1996. Am I right? 94. She's looking at me like, don't look at me. I have no idea what you're talking about. It was the only time I ever got down on my knees, got down at someone's feet, and said anything significant. And I said to Melanie, as I got down on my knees, got down to where her feet were, and I said, honey, Mel, you know I love you, right? Will you marry me? And I waited. Oh, she said yes. She said yes. Come on now. But that's the only time. And I was thinking this through, and I'm like, Mary came up to Jesus, and this is the best she had. She's like, I'm going to fall at your feet. That was her posture with Jesus. Two times. The first time she's sitting at Jesus' feet, she's like, okay, Jesus is sitting on the couch, and there's a place next to him. There's a chair over here, but here's where I'm going to be. I'm sitting right here at Jesus' feet. And then when he walks into the area where she is, she comes running out to him, and she doesn't stand face to face with him. She gets down to his feet again. Her posture is that of humility. Her posture is listening. Her posture isn't the same as her sister. Her sister has got her finger in his face saying, what did you do? You failed my expectations. But instead, she has a totally different posture. And here's what she says. It's the exact same words. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Here's a posture that I see. If I were to reword this in the original language and in the English, it's the same exact wording, but here's how I would reword the two. I would reword the one from Martha, and I would say, Lord, you failed my expectations. And I would reword the one from Mary, and I would say, Mary saying, Lord, I wish you were here. Do you see the difference? And certainly that's my putting my thoughts into this a little bit, but based on the surroundings, I think it's warranted. Have you ever said, Lord, I wish you were here? Do you see the posture? Lord, I wish I could see you. I wish I could hang out with you. I wish I could ask this question. Lord, I wish you could help me out here. Lord, I wish yesterday you would have prevented this from happening. Lord, I wish you were here. You could have stopped this. Go to chapter 12 because here's what happens. Now I'm going to fast forward through the story because here's what happens next. Jesus weeps, and then he goes up to the tomb. So they're traveling together. He goes up to the tomb, and he says, get the stone out of the way here. And they say, hold on a second, Jesus. The body smells. It's been several days. Don't you understand? This is how it works. And we don't, like, you don't need to do that. And, okay, that's what we'll move that away. And he stands out there. And he says, and he's very precise, he doesn't just say, come forth, but he says, Lazarus, come forth. If you had said, come forth, everybody would have come out of the graves. But instead, he says, Lazarus, come forth. And who comes out of the tomb? Lazarus. And so he rises from the dead. And so the evidence of this is pretty incredible. And so here's the reality of what happens then after this, that the people that were chasing Jesus, that wanted Jesus dead, now wanted Lazarus dead, because Lazarus was huge evidence that Jesus is truly who he says he is, that Jesus is God. And so now they're chasing after Lazarus to try to kill him. So Lazarus and Jesus are now both in hiding. And this is just a week before Jesus is crucified. So the tensions are high. And you go down to chapter 12, and you're just following the story through, and here's where you find them. 6 days before the Passover, this is just that week before, Jesus therefore came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So it's very clear, John, the best friend of Jesus, is writing this down for us to understand what's going on. So he comes in and is hanging out with him, and says, So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served. What a big surprise. Isn't that funny? The posture never changed. She's still standing up. She's still serving. She's got to be busy. That's her personality. That's who she is. I just love it. Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at the table. Mary, therefore, now this is important. Mary, therefore, has a different posture. She took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her what? Her hair. That could never be me, right? But here's what Mary does. Mary goes and she says, I'm going to show Jesus how much I love him. In Mark chapter 14, in each of the Gospels, this story is portrayed in each of the Gospels. It's one of the few stories that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John record this same thing. And they all have a little bit different nuance that they highlight, but they all highlight the same thing, one of the same things. They highlight that this ointment, that this perfume, was very expensive. And matter of fact, they each give an amount of money that would be worth, and you'd look at it in our economy today, and you'd say it's worth about 1 year's worth of wage. Okay? That's pretty cool. So the median salary for South Jersey in this area is around $55,000 a year. So let's just put it into a value of $55,000. That's like getting a new truck, man. You with me? I mean, with options is a little bit more, but I would go without the options, $55,000. Yeah, okay, you follow me? Okay, some of you are like, I would never get a truck, okay? Whatever, that's your problem. Do you get $55,000? How much money is that? Could you imagine if you were given $55,000 today? What would you do with it? That would make me a better person. shopping, right? And some of you would be that way, and I'd be like, tomorrow the car dealership opens, whatever. And you would have your thing that you want to do, and I know, we're in church, and you're super spiritual. And you're like, well, I would give it to the church. Okay, cool, you can do that, all right? But do you see what's happening? Martha's over here serving, and Mary's posture is such that she goes and she breaks open this flask. Mark records it and says it's an alabaster flask, and you have to understand a little bit of culture there, that this is something that would be carved out. Alabaster is this thing that you would carve out different parts of it and make it look very ornate. And it would probably be, from the studies that I've done and other people researching this as well, it would probably be a family heirloom passed down to her. Maybe it would be like an inheritance that she received or something like that, or part of a settlement or whatever. And so she's got this alabaster flask that's a very special, very unique flask, a very unique vase that has this great ointment in. It's not like she went down the dollar store and she picked out whatever she could, or over to Walmart and picked up whatever she could that just was nice perfume that's like, I got off the $4.99 shelf and it's good to go. No, it's not that at all. This is something you put in a safe. This is something you don't put out for everyone to see. This is something that you hide for some day down the road. This is not for something that you show off to everyone. It's not something you lend out and say, hey, you know, when you get it back to me, go ahead and get it back to me. No, this is something that you insure just to make sure that it doesn't get devalued or broken or whatever. And here's what she does. She breaks the bottle open. She doesn't just uncork it or unscrew it or open it in a way that it can be sealed again. Mark records that it's broken. It's as if she breaks the top off of it so it could never be sealed again. And then she proceeds with this $55,000 worth of ointment to pour it on the feet of Jesus, and taking her hair, assuming that she would have long hair, and she's then taking her hair, and she's getting this ointment all in her hair and all on Jesus' feet. And if you know that day, right, they walked in sandals on the dirt. Ladies, this is not good for your hair to do this. Would you agree? Some of you are like, this is kind of getting disgusting. It is. Just putting you where it's at. But she goes, and she's sitting at Jesus' feet, worshiping him, showing how valuable he is to her. This goes way beyond anyone's expectation. As a matter of fact, the disciples and those around were irritated with her. Judas specifically steps up and says, whoa, what's going on? That should have been sold, and we should have given the money to the poor. And the Gospels say that's only because he won the money for himself, because he was taking the money anyway. And Jesus says back to her, in two of the Gospels, says back to her, this will be talked about forever. This thing that she did will be talked about forever. Here's why. Her posture is this. Her posture is, I'm all in. I'm all in. And I'm listening to you, Jesus. Whatever you have to say is what I'm going to do. Lord, I'm all in. I'm sitting here. There's nothing between me and you. It's kind of like this, the posture of somebody on their cell phone. Okay, anybody on their cell phone right now? Okay, a few of you are. Okay, so stop. So the posture of somebody on their cell phone, okay, is that you're doing this. You're looking down. And the studies are saying that in the next 10 years, people are going to have bad necks, bad backs, because of the posture of them looking at their cell phone so frequently. I was talking with one of the teens last night. I was trying to talk to with one of the teens last night that we were hanging out here, and they were about 15 feet away from me, and I said, hey! And I said their name and nothing. They were like this. Their posture was like this. And I said, hey! Their name and nothing. Three times, and the person did not move. Have you ever been there where your posture is so intently focused in on your cell phone that you don't hear anything that's going on around you? Matter of fact, the person sitting next to me, Andrew, sitting next to me, he turned and said, yo! Right? Yeah, I know, it's shocking that Andrew would talk louder than me. But anyway, just had to get that in. But anyway, finally got her attention. Here's what she's saying. I'm tuning everything out to listen to you, Jesus. Did you catch it? Listen, I've been there on the cell phone where I'm looking intently and you, like, I'm oblivious to the world around me, and you've been there as well. I'm oblivious, like, nothing matters, and I'm just kind of there. That's where she was. She was sitting at the feet of Jesus, and she's just zoned in. And she's like, I'm with Jesus. I don't care what anybody else says. I don't care what anybody else does. I don't care any criticisms. I don't care about anything, except that I'm with Jesus. The correct posture that we're talking about this morning is to listen. To listen. That's her posture. Listening requires this. If you're writing notes, this is so important. Listening requires this. It requires tuning out the wrong voices. Listen, some of you, some of us have voices in our head. You're not schizophrenic. You're not bipolar. You're normal. But you have got things in your head where you have these voices in your head chiming and saying, you shouldn't do that. They're thinking this, or that's so bad, or whatever. And you've got your own critical voices going on inside of you, your own discouraging, harsh voices that are going on inside of you, your own, like, just hurtful. Listen, when you listen to Jesus, it requires tuning out the wrong voices. You've got to tune out the voices around you that are saying the wrong things and tune out the voices inside of you that are saying the wrong things. So let me illustrate. If you want to lose weight, just to make this practical, maybe what your preferred future looks like, a person that weighs less than where you are today, and we can talk about that at some point. If you want to lose weight, you tune out the person offering you ice cream and you listen to someone who lost weight. Right? You tune it out. If you want to get out of debt, you tune out the person that's in bankruptcy that's giving you advice on how to handle your money. Come on, let's go to Walmart. You can't afford to go. You're in bankruptcy. Right? You tune it out because you know it's not good advice. And you listen to someone who got out of debt. If you want to get closer to God, you tune out the person that's cynical, that's mad at God, and you listen to someone who's been through it and they're following God. You see the distinctions? Mary tuned everything out so she could listen to Jesus. Let me just dive into the story just a little bit further because there's so much nuggets like tucked into here. The broken alabaster jar, you know what she was tuning out? Think about this. It's very symbolic of her past. Maybe this was given to her from her parents, and maybe there are strings tied to that, or maybe there's some hurt or some things like that, or maybe it was given to her as a you know, something she did wrong or whatever it was, but it was something from her past that would be holding her back. And essentially what she's saying is, I'm no longer listening to my past. What I did back here is what I did back here, and that does not affect me where I am today because I'm listening to Jesus, so I'm getting rid of this. I'm not listening to my past. I'm not listening to anything that appears to be more valuable than Jesus because nothing is more valuable than Jesus, right? And that's where her heart is. It's I'm not listening to anyone else or anything else. And matter of fact, she pours out this expensive perfume and it says the fragrance filled the room. And what happens when the fragrance fills the room? It's kind of like, guys, you with me? Maybe some of you did this yesterday. You went to the mall, and you're like, I know my wife likes these smelly candles. Go to Yankee Candle, right? And you walk in the door, and you get an instant, and this is what happens to me every time, like instant migraine, like that pure perfume. The smell's like, whoa, what just happened here? Listen, now I walk into a wood shop, I'm like, comfortable. Walk into a welding shop, I'm like, comfortable. And I walk into a mechanic shop, and I smell the grease and the oil. I'm like, this is great. You know, I kind of rub it on my arms a little bit. Or on my forehead or whatever it might be. This smells great. I walk in a Yankee Candle. I'm like, what just happened here? Guys, you with me? Okay. That's why you have Amazon. So anyway, The fragrance fills the whole room, and everyone gets notified that something weird is happening. This smell is not a normal one. This is a super, super expensive smell that you don't typically smell. And you smell this, and you're like, what is going on here? And it smells good, or maybe you got a headache, or maybe it's, I don't know what it is, or maybe your allergies kick in. I don't know, but everyone knows what's happening. And here's what goes on around her. The people begin to criticize. When you listen to Jesus, here's what has to happen. When you listen in, you have to tune out the critics, because there's no shortage of critics in your life of saying, well, why do you do that? Or why do you say that? Well, you should do this and you should do that. And there's always this criticism of doing something that's opposite of where Jesus wants you to be. And I mean always. Her posture is, I'm just listening to you, Jesus. That's her posture. The domino effect starts with the posture of listening to the right voice. The domino effect starts with listening to the right voice. So here's some application questions. And then I'll close. I'm going to ask you three questions. One has a sub-question. Question number one. What is your posture before God? What is your posture before God? Do you look more like Martha or Mary? Or maybe you're ambivalent and you look more like Lazarus, because we don't see him in these stories in the same kind of way. Are you too busy for God? Are you, well, Pastor, you don't know my schedule. Fair enough. We could compare schedules, and we could see who has a worse schedule. That's not going to help. Are you too busy for God? Are you too anxious and worried about all the things that are on your to-do list, to-don't list, that God's not even in your life? What's your posture before God right now? Now, oh, as soon as I get through this season. Now, guess what? Listen, here's what I've learned. I used to play that game. I just got to get through the season, and then I'll... Guess what happens after you get through that season of busyness? Yeah, another one comes. Well, I just got to get through this one now. Guess what happens after that one? Another one comes. Life has a way of handing you so many things to do that if you don't intentionally carve out time to listen to God, you'll never listen to God. Question number two. You with me? Here's question number two. Who do you sit and listen to the most? Who do you sit and listen to the most? Here's what I think. I think a lot of us are listening to this the most. Or we have one of these screens in our living room and bedroom and kitchen and dining room and bathroom, some of you. Because we're listening to this all day long. I'm listening to how many likes I got. I'm listening to how many people commented. I'm listening to this. And you just keep going on and on and on with listening to all kinds of things that numb you. Listen, who do you sit and listen to the most? This is why I encourage you, start your day. Just start your day. Start with 5 minutes. If you're not used to this, just set your alarm 5 minutes earlier. I know that's the best part of sleeping, is the 5 minutes before your alarm goes off. But just do it. Set it 5 minutes earlier. Spend 5 minutes with the Lord. Just try it for a week. Now, the cumulative effect of that is awesome. In 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks' time, you're not going to see a tremendous amount of success or a change. But it's a domino effect of sitting and listening to Jesus on a regular basis. Don't do it once and be like, well, occasionally, like I tried it today and tomorrow and whatever. No. It's a domino effect. Who do you sit and listen to the most? Sometimes you should be tuning out people that are taking you in the wrong direction. Are you teachable? Are you teachable? I mean, that's all implied here, that you're even listening. Here's the reality. We should, and these are tips now, we should be around people that are a step further than us. Agreed? As a pastor, do you know I've made friends with, and I went to a conference last week even, with people and pastors and friends that are ahead of me, not by a day or a week. I have pastors that are way ahead of me in different areas, and they're challenging and provoking me to keep growing. I have friends that are fathers that are light years ahead of me as a father and a dad and say, hey, listen, here's how you should be a better dad. I have friends of mine that are better husbands, and I get people around me that are ahead of me. Listen, if you gather people around you that are a step less than you, it just shows how insecure you are in a sense that you have to make them feel, or by having them in your life makes you feel more valuable. That's essentially all that is. And I've done that. I'm like, why am I doing that? It's just holding me back. I'm listening to the wrong people. Listen, we should have around us people that are a step further than us, or two or 10 steps further than us, so that they can guide us through it. Or maybe you've gone through a loss and things like that you're like, man, I don't know how to work through this. I'm bitter and angry. And you're sitting there. You can find all kinds of people that are here saying, yeah, be bitter, be angry. Or you can find people that have processed through and they're following Jesus through it, and their life is productive and healthy. Do you see where this is going? It's a domino effect that starts with tiny little things. Find people that are a step ahead of you. And this third question. Who do you need to listen to? And it just kind of works through here. Who do you need to listen to? In your life right now, maybe you need to write down a name. Or maybe you need to write down, I need to find someone that's here that's going to help me get to here. Who do you need to listen to? If you're listening to somebody that's a step ahead, or if you get around someone that's a step ahead of you, here's a trap. You ready for this? Don't do all the talking. You get it? Don't justify the position that you're in and where you're at. Do a whole lot of listening. Okay? If your posture is humble and teachable, if you listen, you will begin a domino effect that literally changes your life. I hope that you are on this journey with me. I hope that over the next 6 weeks, you'll come back and you'll tune in. And maybe you can't be here because you whatever, but you can tune in on YouTube and tune in on our website, and you can listen to the messages there. I hope you'll be here, and I hope that you'll be the people around that find stronger people around you, that you'll be able to do that as a church as well and connect well so that you can grow and continue to allow domino effects in your life that helps you to grow, to be the person in your preferred future that you want to be, and more importantly, that God wants you to be. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you. Thank you that as you walked into Mary and Martha's life, you showed faithful, consistent love and grace and mercy to them. And Lord, I thank you that we're just a work in progress in need of your interventions. And Lord, I pray that you'd help us to be open to you. Lord, I pray that we would be teachable. I pray that we would listen and follow after you with a whole heart. Lord, if there's an alabaster jar, or if there's some precious thing that we're holding in front of you, Lord, I pray that we'd break it and use that as worship for you and pour it all out. Lord, I pray that you'd guide us. Lead us to be who you've called us to be. And we give you the praise through Jesus, I pray. Amen.